May I please have your prayers and attention for a little while? Talk this morning from the 24th chapter of the book of Acts. I'd like to go back to that same passage, partially from the 23rd and also the 24th. Talk about one of the primary characters in this passage of Scripture.
Write his name up here.
Man's name is Felix. You ever heard a message on Felix? Well, let's look at old Felix a little bit and see what we can learn about him. The story contained in this passage of Scripture is about Paul. Maybe we should give a little of the background of it. Imagine if you were in Iraq tonight, if you were an Iraqi living in that country. The country has been defeated by a foreign power, in this case the United States. They had a government, but we deposed it. Another government has been set up, but it's very much dominated by the United States. And those people are fighting over there. This very unrestful country. Just, it's halfway around the world from me, but just reading what little I can gather from the news, I don't think I'd want to live there very much. They kill people every day. And they do it in the dirtiest kind of ways. They're killing each other over religion, much as anything else. I don't know how many different brands of it there are. I know about the Shiites and the Sunnis over there, but I'm sure that they've got subgroups within those. And their primary argument is with each other, but then we're the bad guy to all of them because we're the infidel. So they want to kill all Americans and all of everybody else who doesn't believe like their faith is. The worst thing you could do just about would be to be over there where all this is going on. When people get killed, their family members don't forget that. Now that's not something you can just go say, I'm sorry, bad mistake, and it's all fixed up. That's for a lifetime, sometimes longer. Worst thing you could do over there would be to be one of those people and get accused of being one of the folks stirring up all the trouble. There's all the time trying to catch these bombers before they kill somebody, and they're not very successful, looks like to me. And if they found you and you were one of the folks stirring up that trouble, or even accused of being one of the folks stirring up that, you'd be in a lot of trouble. It's a premise of American law that you're innocent until proven guilty, but it'd almost be the other way around over there. And especially if you were accused of one of the Iraqis themselves and brought to the government. Well, that's a little bit like, maybe it's a lot like the situation that Paul was in. The country of Israel had been conquered by the Romans. But the Jews of all the nations that the Romans ever conquered, the historians say, they were the hardest to govern. And the reason they were so hard to govern was because of their religion. That if you were Greek or a Hun, they didn't have much religion anyway. It's better to lay down what you got and get along with the Romans than it is to stand up and fight. The Jews would fight when there's no chance they'd win. They just fight because they're Jews. You defile our religion, we'll go to war with you, and if we get killed, we get killed. But they were that way. So the Romans considered it hardship duty is almost like being assigned to get your career destroyed if you were chosen by Caesar or the Senate to go to Jerusalem and try to rule over the Jews. The folks who got that job would rather be just about anywhere else. But they got at their disposal the power of the Roman army and the Roman justice system. But still, they just about can't control these people. And they had a long line of rulers sent by Rome to Israel whose careers were destroyed by being there. So they're hypersensitive, quick to take offense, quick to deal with anything that came up. And here comes Paul on the scene. And he is about as troublesome a fellow as the Jews ever had to deal with in all that history. They felt that he was at risk of turning their whole belief system upside down. And besides, there's always those personal politics that are going on. If you were in Iraq and you knew everything that's going on over there, you would know that some of the bombings are taking place because this guy wants to be more important than this guy is. So they're killing each other's followings. Those imams that are over there, and they're, each one of them's got their group, and every once in a while their name pops up in the news. This one is an important leader, and that one is one of the most respected, and so forth. Well, they fight with each other because they are carnal people, and they use carnal means to try to get ahead of one another, get more following, more influential. And if you were put down in that witch's brew, you'd feel like you were in a pretty awkward position, wouldn't you? So Paul, he's been spending his life in the gospel, carrying out the work of the Lord. Went up to Jerusalem, for all we can tell in the scriptures, not intending to make any trouble. Said, bound in the spirit. The Lord sent me there, in other words. Agabus, remember Agabus? Met him, Agabus took his own clothes and tied Paul hand and foot and said, so shall I wear these garments be in Jerusalem. And Paul said, well, I know that's so. But I don't allow that to stop me. If I were going to lose my life there, I would still go. I feel like the Lord wants me to. And besides, I love those people. I want to try to help them. That was at the base of what Paul was doing. Got there at the temple in worship, and the Jews stirred up revolt against him. They said he brought somebody who was unclean into the temple. That was the basis of their revolt. So they captured him, and they were about to kill him, stone him to death. He was innocent of what they charged him with. The people that he brought into the temple had a right to be there. But the Jews were throwing dust in the air and trying to stir up the mob. If you can get him killed before anybody intervenes, then once he's dead, it doesn't matter whether he's right or wrong, he's dead. So they're trying to do that. And the captain of the guard saw what's going on, took a bunch of soldiers, ran in, got him out. Saved his life. So then the folks had to deal with it. And just as there are today in Iraq, there were two authorities there. One is the military, and that's who rescued him. The military authority, the soldiers, had a right to judge his case. Lysias, in this case, captain. He had a right to make a decision, just like our military commanders do, and they've got people in custody over there in Iraq. But they also had a civil government. And the captain of the Romans decided this is too hot a potato for me to handle, so I can get rid of it and pass it off to the civil governor. That's Felix. So the Jews got wind of this, and they got together and made a vow, a whole company of them, and they would neither eat nor drink until Paul was caught and put to death. And the captain got wind of that. Somebody came and told him. So he put together a pretty formidable military force and got all around Paul, protected him, took him in the middle of the night, making it hard to do. I guess those fellows are still fasting because they never did manage to kill Paul. Took him over there where Felix could judge him. That's what's spoken of in the 23rd chapter of Acts. And in the 24th, this is where the folks got together and accused Paul before Felix, sent their best order, because now it's in the hands of the government, and they can't just step in and kill him like they'd want to, so the next thing to do is make the best case they can against Paul. Let me tell you a little bit about Felix. First of all, Felix at one time was a Roman slave. And apparently that made an impact on Felix that he never got over. I don't know. There weren't any laws protecting slaves in the Roman Empire. Man owned his slave just like he did his dog. In fact, we have more laws protecting dogs in the United States today than the Romans had protecting slaves. If you had one that you didn't like, you could kill him. You didn't have to tell anybody or ask anybody's permission. You could beat him as long as you wanted to. You could feed him whatever you wanted to. You could work him as long as you wanted to. No laws. Give him days off or any kind of requirement. It just belonged to you. You could do anything you wanted to with him. Felix was apparently that kind of a slave. But Felix also had kinfolk who were closely connected with Augustus Caesar. And they arranged for him to get a pardon. And he also, or to get freed, it wasn't a pardon, they arranged for him to get freed. I'm sorry, I said Augustus, it was Claudius. He was a brother of a man named Pallas, and Pallas was one of Claudius's chief favorites. Emperors like some people more than others, and that's the way he was. So Pallas arranged for Felix to get freed, and also by his influences, arranged for Felix to be promoted from one job to another, to another, to another. He steadily climbed the ladder. I don't know how much Claudius really liked Pallas, because in the end, he sent Felix to this troublesome country of Israel and made him governor there in Jerusalem. He got the civil authority over the state. And his job is to keep peace. But he's supposed to collect taxes. Roman rule was pretty liberal, really. Conquered nations were allowed to keep their own religion, a lot of their own systems, on their own land, but they had to pay taxes and they had to obey the Roman law. Really, that's pretty much it. And the Jews didn't want to do either one. So Felix is trying to force this by the rule of the army and the other things, and he's got troubles doing it. There's this Egyptian fellow. He stirred up, he said he was Christ. He said he was a Messiah. And he got 30,000 men. How in the world do you do that? He got 30,000 men to follow him out into the desert, supposedly in the looking for the Messiah. Best I can tell, is kind of like people do now once in a while. You read about a group that decide they know when the Lord's going to come again, and so they go hide out somewhere by themselves and wait for that day to come. Well, that's a little bit what this Egyptian fella did, but Felix is afraid of this because he knows it's going to bring trouble from the Roman. While these 30,000 are out there in the desert, they're certainly not paying taxes, and they could be hatching up trouble, cause army to have to come down there. So he got infantry and cavalry and went out there and whipped them, killed about 400 of them, and took a bunch more wounded and took a bunch of prisoners. And the Egyptian fellow who was leading them all, he decided that was too much for him to take, and so he took a hike and ran off and left them to get along the best way they could. So Felix put that down. And you remember the story of the Good Samaritan. At the time of Jesus' ministry, Judea was thick with robbers and thieves of every sort. Felix put a stop to that. Felix established military patrols. He established stern justice. He hunted those fellows down. He put up guards. He stopped all of that that was going on. And the Jews of Caesarea got into a conflict with the Syrians, which had the potential to escalate into a war, because the Jews were always getting in trouble with somebody. And Felix stepped in that, and he brought peace to that region. So he had some things going for him as a ruler. He was a man who ruled with a stern hand, but he cared about his responsibility, and he was diligent to take care of it. The Bible tells us that Felix was married to Drusilla. You've heard that name. So let's say a little bit about Drusilla. Drusilla, well, Felix had three wives during his, or that we have record of. And each time he married, how he managed to do this, I don't know, but each time he married the daughter or the niece of some high ruler. And of course, that helped promote him. The third was Drusilla, and she was sister of Agrippa. And this was Drusilla's second marriage. The story is that in the social circle in which Felix moved, he had contact with Drusilla. She was a strikingly beautiful woman, and didn't hurt that she was related to Agrippa. He saw her and won her away from her husband. She had a boy who was 8 or 9 years old, something like that at the time. When Drusilla was only 6 years old, she was pledged, one of those arranged marriages, to Epiphanes, who was a son of Antiochus. He was a king. But that fell through. Her brother refused to ratify the marriage. And then, about the year 53, she married a guy who was king of the Emesines, who received her on condition that he would be circumcised. But Felix saw her then, fell in love with her, persuaded her to leave her. He got a Jewish magician to fool her some way and persuaded her to leave her husband. And Felix took her. And for all we can find out about her through what's known, Josephus and other authors, she was a person of indifferent character. She might do good and she might do bad, that kind of a person. This was the one who judged Paul. He'd been ruler in his office about 6 or 7 years at the time that Paul was brought before him. And you know the case that was brought. Tertullus gave the account that he was, that Paul was accosted stirring up insurrection. Try to make it look like it's not just trouble against us Jews conflicting with our religion, but it's the kind of thing, Felix, that'll get you in trouble yourself. Then Paul made his answer. And he explained the things that he said is not true. And Paul told him, I know you have some knowledge of this, the way we believe, because you're married to some. Drusilla was a Jewess, I neglected to say, but Drusilla had apparently abandoned her Jewish faith in favor of being a heathen. But the knowledge never leaves you. And being a man's wife, undoubtedly she told him things. You would expect that Felix went to her from time to time to ask questions. Why are the Jews doing this? What do I need to do to work it out? And she was his advisor. And Paul said, I know that. And I would like to comment, without taking the time to read it all, that Tertullus, in his presentation to Felix, referred to these good things that he had done. We know you put down the bandits. We know you brought peace between the Jews and the at Caesarea and the Syrians. And this Egyptian fellow, you've done good things for him, but he appealed to him first for the things that he'd done, but also on his vanity. It flattered him, we would say. When Paul spoke to Felix, he tried to deal with him, although he did not, he didn't just stand up and tell him, I know that you're a man who seduced another man's wife. I know that you were once a slave. Bring out everything there was to know. He spoke with him about the good things, but he spoke with him about the things most likely to touch his character. Whatever there was there, it wasn't very much. But whatever it was, that's what Paul appealed to. It's one of the lessons in studying the story of Paul and Felix when we deal with those who are even steeped in sin around us. And we're trying to appeal to spiritual things. We touch the most valuable things that are left in their lives. And that's what Paul did. Twenty-fourth verse of the 24th chapter. And after certain days, when Felix came with his wife, Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. And he is as he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come. I don't know from the way this passage is worded Whether this happened in open court or whether Felix had one of those closed-door sessions with Paul, it sounds like to me they may have met several times. He reasoned. It's difficult to do that in open court, courts with which I'm familiar, because there are such rigid rules about what can be presented and what not. But Paul reasoned. Let me say this. Salvation is the most reasonable way that there is to live in this world. Salvation is extremely reasonable. Folks, young folks, the devil may tell you someday in your life that it's foolish to live this way. Listen to the Scriptures. Listen to those who have walked down that road. It is so reasonable to live with honor. It is so reasonable to live without sin, to be honest with everybody around you. It brings so much more peace in your life to be gentle than it does to fight. It is so reasonable not to envy anybody, not to hate anybody, not to steal from anybody. You can't steal from somebody, whether their good name or their money or any other thing, and not devalue that person at the same time, and you can't devalue somebody else and not devalue yourself. You never really think higher of somebody else, of yourself as a person, I mean to say, than you do of somebody else. He reasoned with him. And look what he reasoned about, of righteousness. I want to reason with you tonight. Righteousness just simply means doing right. It's so reasonable to do right. I've been a carpenter most of my adult life, and I've worked on buildings that were built right and those that were built wrong. This chapel that we're working on here not long ago hung the doors, one going outside that way. It was a monster. It took me far longer to hang that door than most doors do. The reason is because one jam side goes this way, and the other side goes this way, and the top is not parallel with them. And there's nothing you can measure to that tells you how a door is held on in only two or three places at the most by the hinges. And it hits on the strike plate on the other side. And it has to line up across, and all you've got to line it up on is just those two places. If that door had been built on a level foundation and the sides were put in there square and plumb, straight up and down, it's a very simple matter. Doors come in standard sizes. That door is an odd size, and it had to be cut down on both sides. I had to go get a special door that we could even cut down that much to get it to, and then we had to cut it on angles both ways. And they don't match each other. And that's why when you go out that door, you still have trouble getting in and out of it. It's a little better now than it was. It's so much easier when you build it right. Rightness, just in the world, just doing things right. When you work on a car, get it right. You're so much better off. You build a house, build it right. Do what you do right. So many of our young people are getting away from that today. But I want to stress it to us here this evening while we have a chance to do it. I remember when I started carpenter, an old carpenter told me, do more than you're paid to do, and one day you'll get paid for more than you can do. Our young generation does not seem to have that understanding. Their attitude tends to be, if I showed up for work, I've done you a favor by being here. And I'm going to do as little as I can for the money that I get. Well, when you get that attitude, you've gone about as high with that company as you're going to go. Companies are always looking for somebody who will take responsibility, who will make sure that things are done right. Doing right is so much more than just taking time to pray every day. He reasoned with him about righteousness. Felix, there is a right and wrong. If there is right and wrong, if it's wrong to steal from somebody, if it's wrong to hate somebody, if we humans can understand right and wrong, then there is a God. And if there is a God, there's accountability. And if there's accountability, whether in this world or the next to come, and we do wrong, we're going to give an account for that. We have to meet it. Whoever put the sides of that door in and didn't get them square, that had to be worked with. It didn't just fall down. It didn't just go away. It has to be taken. I do not respect people who go into restrooms and tear things off the wall and scribble graffiti on them. And if I were a judge and somebody were brought before me who did that, my sentence would be, you go back and fix it. And you find out the skill that it takes to get that hand dryer to work like it did. You get the wires crossed and shock yourself a few times, and you'll learn to be a little more cautious, perhaps. And so, you know, it's always easier to tear down than it is to build. The old devil knows that too. Righteousness. If we humans can tell the difference between right and wrong, then there is a God. And if there's a God, then there's accountability. And he reasoned with him. You ought to do right, Felix. You ought to do right. And he didn't have to say the words, but it's all there, just in the spirit of the meeting. Felix, it wasn't right for you to take somebody else's life. Felix, it's not right for you to have the attitudes that you have right now that you're dealing with. And it came out in a little bit what those attitudes were. You reasoned with him of righteousness and temperance. Righteousness leads to temperance. When you know there's a right and wrong, it makes you want to be careful about the wrong. That's what temperance is. It means you stop doing some things. He reasoned with him of righteousness and temperance and judgment to come. Felix, you know you're getting a little bit long in the tooth and I'm older too. How long does this last? Someday we're going to leave this world. Someday, what happens then? What happens then? And when will it come? People die at all ages. When will it be? Felix, for you, for me? When will it come? How do you know? Today you're sitting to judge me. How do you know that you will be the one to finalize my judgment? Took another man's wife. Do you know how many days you're going to have with her? Nobody knows. None of us know we'll leave this building alive tonight. There have been other gatherings just like this, and disaster struck before the folks got away. We have no guarantees. We have no guarantees. You reasoned with him of righteousness and temperance and judgment to come. Felix trembled and answered, "Go thy way for this time." Now, people have different ways of dealing with conviction. I've thought about it a lot through the years. Lord, help us tonight. I did not grow up in a saint congregation. I was 16 when my parents moved to Guthrie. I was an occasional visitor. And I had never heard strong, anointed, altar call messages. And when I heard them for the first times, I didn't have much resistance. I couldn't take it. And soon put in for salvation. Now I've learned that not everybody's that way. There are things you can do to divert conviction. And Felix found one of them here. At another time, I will hear you again about this matter. Put him off. Folks, there are defining moments in life. Sometimes they determine the rest of our course. Sometimes they decide the kind of person that we're going to be. I'm thinking of a defining moment that occurred a few years ago. A place where I was with some folks who were celebrating a holiday. Several men there and their families. Two-story house. Got a call from upstairs. The house is on fire. And we dashed up the stairs into the room. And the whole wall on one side was already engulfed in flames. The floor was on fire. The bed was on fire. I was afraid of a flashover. That's when the room explodes nearly in flame. And two men were in the room trying to do something about it. Children were in the house. We started immediately, called the fire department. It was a defining moment. It was a defining moment. One fellow, somebody asked him, get some water. So he dashed downstairs to the kitchen and he got one of those red plastic cups that's a little bit bigger than this. And he ran into the bathroom and started filling it up and bringing it in there and handing it to him. Here. It's a time of panic. The man who owned the house, he said to him, get us a hose. Do you know where the hose is? Get us a hose. So he ran outside to get a hose. And he said, my hose is in the yard. It's frozen. I can't do anything. But get a hose somewhere. Go to the neighbors or get in the garage and get a hose. And he never did do anything. And the other two men wet some towels. And they managed to get a hose working. And it saved the house. It burned that room and saved the house. Without saying any more, I would say that's a defining moment. There's no way to go back from that. The man who got the little cup of water, you can't tell your wife, well, that wasn't really me. When we have our next fire, I'll do better than that. And it's all done. The man whose house it was, basically what he said was, let it burn. I can't save it. Maybe the insurance will pay me off. And that was all. I mean, he was afraid. He was ready to run and leave everybody else in it, pretty much. And that's a defining moment. And he can't go back from it. Well, he's separated from his wife today. And I'm sure that's not the only reason. But I'm also sure it had something to do with it. This is a defining moment for Felix. There are defining moments in life. And the foundation we lay for those moments has a lot to do with what we're going to do when the time gets there. Felix had been a cruel man. He'd been a slave. He had learned the things that slaves learn. He learned to deal with a heavy hand when he got ready to. He learned to be evasive. Here is a chance to change it all. I don't know how many times the Lord dealt with him in his lifetime, but this is perhaps the strongest dealing that he ever had. The voice, not of Paul, of the Lord. Reason with him about righteousness and temperance and judgment to come. You can survive conviction. You can do what Felix did, and life goes on. And so it did for Felix. You can have ulterior motives while you're right in the presence of God. Felix hoped that he'd get money from Paul. He knew Paul was a powerful, influential man. He knew Paul had wealthy friends. He knew those friends wanted Paul to be free. If I keep him here, he forgot all about right and wrong and justice. Paul's case had been pled. And those who accused him had no valid basis for their grievance against him. And Felix knew it. He didn't keep Paul because he was guilty or because he was a threat. He kept Paul to get money. And he kept Paul not on the merits of right or wrong. He kept him to please the Jews. It was a political move. 2 years. And Paul reasoned with him, and I think often, Felix came to talk with Paul about these things, and I also think as these things go, each time Felix came, the conviction got a little less, and it got a little easier to disregard his own soul. And that is so true to the way life is. Look, young folks, be careful. Please be careful about disregarding the call of the gospel. It's camp meeting season. You will possibly be in worship services where there is anointed preaching dealing with salvation. If the Lord has mercy to come and convict your spirit about changes you need to make, be extremely careful about learning the skills of denying conviction. This is one of them. Another means that people use to deny conviction is to absorb themselves in other things. At the time, I mean, get in a conversation, read a book, do anything besides listen to what the Lord is trying to say, to anything to block it out. That's a means that people use to avoid conviction. Another means that people, one of the most common is to say, not now. At some more convenient time, I'll send for you. Things of that sort. Those are some of the most common things. Another means that people use, and the devil greatly reinforces this, is when the time of the convicting spirit of the Lord goes forth to speak to your soul. It's so easy to think about the pleasures that you will enjoy in doing something that's wrong. The devil holds it up in front of you at that time. Oh, folks, it's extremely dangerous. This was a defining moment for Felix. There are defining moments in life. There are moments you can never go back from that set the course for the rest of your life. And we don't always know when it's coming. It's not coming at our disposal. It comes at God. Look at this. God has a plan that's greater than our wisdom. God sent Paul to Jerusalem. Lysias rescued Paul, and he had nothing more in mind when he sent him to Felix than to get a hot potato out of his lap. That's all he was thinking of. But God has a providence. Now let me back up. God had in mind to send Paul to Rome and to witness to Lysias, to Festus, to Felix, to a number of others, to Agrippa, all along the journey, 276 men on the ship, to the people on that little island where the snake bit him on the hand, to the guards in Rome where he lived 2 years. God had all that in mind. All Lysias had in mind was, get this hot potato off of my hands and let somebody else deal with it. And it looks like that Paul met obstructions every step of his journey going to Rome. But the fact is, God deals in ways that are too great for us humans always to understand. And His purposes are not the same as ours. It would be easy if we were back there to get caught up in the politics of that time and not understand all that has taken place. But God has a plan that's greater than the politics of our time. And God is able to bring His plan to pass, regardless of what the politics of our time may or may not be. And so He did with Paul. So Felix had his defining moment. But he kept Paul a prisoner 2 years. And he didn't need to do it. He could have turned him loose. But he did it because he wanted money. And because he wanted peace with the Jews. He wanted to please the Jews, is a better way to say it. And in the end, he got no money. Nobody came to bail Paul out. He was a vain hope. You understand me? When the time comes that the Lord is dealing with your spirit, whatever the devil holds out there in front of you. I know this man had been a slave. No doubt he'd been hungry. No doubt he had seen others clothed in fine things while he wore rags. And it affected him. No doubt he never forgot that. It did something to him. Folks, life will do something to you. You want to get over it or you want to be that way forever? In his heart, this man's governor, he is elevated in Caesar's eyes, but in his heart, he's still in the pig pen. He's still acting like he doesn't know where his next meal's coming from. You want to live your life with whatever anybody's done to you? Just carry that along forever? Here was his chance to change, to rise up, to be noble, to rise above it. Here was his chance. But instead, he chose to grovel right back down there in the poverty that he had been in before and hold a man hostage who was a just man for money. And did he get it? He did not. And folks, I'll tell you, whatever the devil holds out in front of you, you won't get it either. It won't be that way. He wanted to please the Jews. And do you think he pleased the Jews? The Jews followed Felix throughout his career. And they made trouble for him. And all his superiors over him, all the way up to Caesar himself. They accused Felix of everything they could think of. Not understanding their law. Not working with their leaders. Not obeying Roman law. Not obeying Caesar's commands. They accused him and accused him and accused him until finally Caesar decided the best thing I can do, since these people are so discontented, get rid of him. He didn't get any of what he thought he was going to get. Do you see the lesson? That's why Felix, one of the reasons why Felix is in the Bible, there are defining moments in life. Felix made the wrong choice. I don't know whether the Lord ever dealt with him again. Often he does, because he's very merciful. But this cost him something. What I do know is Felix never got over it. In the end, he lost his governorship. And I don't know how he died. I haven't been able to find out. But he died in obscurity, and he's nothing but a footnote in history. The man he condemned is one of the greatest names that's ever recorded in all of history. And the difference between the two is nobility, is salvation. Oh, and by the way, the word Felix means happy. But he didn't fill out his name, did he? Huh. Your parents gave you their name, your name that you have, each of us, in love. I was a child, and I've been a parent. Been through the process. Parents carefully select names for their children, hoping it'll mean something. Hoping their children won't dishonor their name. Both the name they give them and their family name. I'll say myself. My name is Laurel. I've met maybe one or two other people named Laurel. They're not all men in life. When I was in the first grade, my parents told me if the boys made fun of me, I could go by my middle name, which is Edwin. So they did, and I did. But when I got old enough, I said, why did you name me that? My dad said there was a man. He said, I knew him when I was young. He said, I admired that man as much as any man I've ever known. He said he was a very fast-thinking man. He could make snap decisions. He said he was very honest. He was very good at dealing with people. He said, I named my son because of the pleasant memory, and I have wished many times through the years that I had kept that first name. I wonder why Felix's parents named him. You think they named him that hoping he'd grow up to be a blackmailer, hoping he'd grow up to be somebody who would be so much politician, he'd curry favor with people ahead of being honest. What is the dream for your life? Those who loved you and gave you your start, don't you think they had more in mind than that should just be the devil's playground, his tool? Oh, Felix, in the end, you lost it all. He had his chance, he had his defining moment, and he lost it. And now, it's just one among millions of other stories who have gone the same way. It can happen to anybody. It can happen to you, it can happen to me, it can happen to any of us. Thank God for salvation in Jesus Christ. Thank God for the opportunity when the defining moment comes to say, if it cost me my governorship, I'd rather be clean inside. I'll do the right thing. I'll serve the Lord. Folks, if you put the Lord first, He'll go with you through life. He'll bless you. You will be glad. In the end, when you come to the end, you will see that righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come are so reasonable. There is no record in the Bible of a saint of God, Old Testament or New, lived their life for the Lord, came to the end of the journey, says all a mistake. If I had it to do over, I'd live to the world as much as I could. There's not a record in the Bible of any who said that. One who did go the right way said at the end, I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, and not for me only, but to all those who love His appearing. Thank you for the courtesy of your attention tonight. Amen.